This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. You know when I said at the top of the show that Brooke was off this week? Well, she is, technically, but she did record and leave us this.
Last Saturday, Liberia, 42 days after the last Ebola victim was safely laid to rest, was declared Ebola-free, though its neighbors, Sierra Leone and Guinea, are not. Back in December, OTM producer Mira Sharma and I spent a week in Liberia. We visited a town that had been ravaged by Ebola. We saw how the virus had thrown all of the country's problems into stark relief, like the restrictions on free speech and endemic poverty and government corruption. We were shadowing the journalists of the Monrovia-based newspaper Front Page Africa, and our guide was its editor-in-chief, Rodney Sia. He launched the paper online while a reporter in New Jersey, but after criticism that he was too far away from home to understand its problems, he shifted his operation to Monrovia. Front Page Africa is Liberia's most widely read paper and arguably the most troublesome for the government. After Rodney was jailed for reporting one official's misappropriation of funds, thousands of readers filled the streets to block the police wagon carting him off to prison. He's a local hero. First, we'll play some clips from our hour from Liberia, and then a conversation I had with Rodney this week. So, Rodney, what are your plans for today?
Well, today's supposed to be the biggest holiday in Liberia. It's called Tubman's birthday.
William Tubman?
He died in 1971, but he ruled for 27 years, which makes him the longest-serving Liberian president. This day became the biggest holiday in Liberia.
You said it was kind of like America's 4th of July?
It's even bigger than Christmas here. People leave their houses as early as 7 o'clock in the morning. They set up tents on the beach. They have parties on the beaches. People look forward to it every year. Mm-hmm. But because of the Ebola this year, the government has said, no one should go on the beaches. So May and I will go around and see if we can find some action.
Where's the Miami Beach?
Where they wrote the Miami Beach, man?
Miami Beach. The managers, the workers are desperate because the government has closed the beaches not just for the holiday, but until Ebola leaves Liberia. Fancy hotel beachfronts aren't patrolled, nor clubs, nor markets. Rodney's subtext is that these public restrictions are unevenly applied to the poor.
So welcome to Miami Beach.
What's your name again?
My name is Lapis Wembati.
What do you do here?
I have a beach business here.
And how is it affecting you?
Very horrible. We agreed to close down, but now the government is saying we should lock down for real until Ebola leaves Liberia. If you want to close down a beach, close down every activity that will cause crowd. Even a party, even a mosque, even a church.
Even a wedding.
Anything you think that will cause more than 5%, it should lock it down.
Rodney's sympathy for the men who may have lost their livelihoods is paired with a countervailing concern that Liberians are growing cavalier about Ebola. Though the number of new cases has dropped to 50 a day, it's appeared in every county. Front Page Africa wrestles with that. When the 14-week state of emergency was lifted last month, Monrovia seemed to be drifting into a new normal. There's chlorinated water for hand washing in front of shops and public buildings, but people again throng the markets and ride three to a motorbike. On the day we landed, Monrovia was locked in an epic traffic jam as young people rallied in the streets for former soccer superstar, now Senate candidate, George Weah. At our Sunday breakfast, Rodney said that would be Monday's lead.
What's the headline?
Ebola, not real in politics. We've all seen how people die from Ebola in Liberia, but you have this rally yesterday where thousands of people were in the streets celebrating. They took the shoes off, walking barefoot. They had like shirts off, holding each other, hugging, kissing in some places. Like for a day, Ebola was not real.
Front Page Africa seems to be determined to remind people that this crisis is far from over. Why do you think people think it is?
That's how Liberians are. They're quick to forget. Everybody wants it to be over with Ebola, but Liberia cannot be officially declared Ebola-free until our neighbors, Sierra Leone and Guinea, are declared free. Someone can cross over the border and come back in Liberia and infect somebody else. So that's why it's important to have this message.
It's time to protect yourself. Protect your family. Protect your community.
Mira and I were wondering about Rodney. He was a contradiction, a young, old-time newsman, warm but solitary, open but guarded. So on the bumpy road back from an Ebola-scarred village, I probed front-page journalists May Azanga and Wadi Williams about Rodney.
We find Rodney a little elusive. We can't quite figure him out.
Working with Rodney for the past 5 years, almost 5 years, I haven't been able to figure him out. I keep learning every day, you know, what actually motivates him. You see, Rodney has no wife, no kid. So his newspaper is his life. And sometimes I'm like, maybe if you had a family, you will know what it's like to wake up in the morning, you know, with kids, and you have to tend to them first before you get, you know, on the field to do your job. But Rodney will be editing your stories and call you at 12 or 1 a.m. in the morning and expects that you will be up. The other day he called me, I was about to leave, you know, it's curfew. Curfew is like 12 p.m. and I left the office around 10, and it's like an hour drive from the office to where I live, so I have to leave an hour ahead. And he calls me on the phone and says, hey, come. I go into the office and what he asks is that, why did you use this cliche in your story? I'm like, why couldn't you just say it on the phone? You had to make me come into your office. He said, don't you ever use it again. So I haven't been able to figure him out. I haven't been able.
He will blow the door. He will knock the desk. When Rodney is angry, he will slam the door.
Seriously?
Oh, then Rodney, what?
He seems so He's a quiet giant. And so restrained.
Don't push him. Hi.
You succeed, they vex. Anything you do, they vex. You working, they vex. You in school, they vex. When they buy your market, they vex. Anything you do, they vex. That's because you're looking good.
Toward the end of our stay, we had a long sit-down with Rodney about his childhood and his seeming obsession for journalism. We'll just play the part where he mentions his influences, his granduncle Albert Port, a man with a passion for exposing corruption and who didn't mind paying the price, and also another uncle, another journalist.
Besides my uncle Albert Port, my next person that I admired was my uncle Kenneth Best. In him, I saw someone who I could emulate, I could model my life after. When Samuel Doe closed down his paper, The Observer, in the 80s, I went to his house. His wife made bread to sell to help the family stay afloat, and I sold the bread. When the paper was operating, after school, I took the papers in the streets, buy your Observer, buy your Observer. And I wanted to be him. He was in the States. He came to me to help him start the Observer again. So I started the online Observer. But there was a lot of stories that we ran that he didn't like. So we butt heads a lot of time. His friend, the ambassador to the U.S. at the time.
Which embassy?
The Liberian embassy in Washington. Mm. The audit report was done on the embassy funding. They funneled money through the embassy to the States. And we did a story about it, and he didn't like it. He told me to retract the story. I said, I can't do it. And that's how we fell apart. And I started Front Page Africa.
Does he talk to you anymore?
We don't speak. If I see him, I will pass. Only because I've tried speaking to him, he won't speak to me. So I stopped trying. All I ever wanted to do in life was to emulate what he was doing. And I can, for the life of God, figure out why he hates me so much. I hope that one day, before I die or he dies, we can make peace. But I don't see it because the friction has gone beyond a point of being repaired.
Let me just stipulate, for the purposes of a hypothetical,
that you're not getting along with your uncle now because you confronted him with his limitation. His friends, his alliances with President Sirleaf, these were things that he decided he didn't want to compromise with uncompromising journalism. Can you see at some point when you're older, maybe as old as your uncle is, the prospect of prison or the promise of an easier life that you might find yourself in his position sometime?
I hope not. I won't lie to you. I can never say never. The reason I don't have too many friends here is like people who think they're my friends, they figure that because you're a friend of theirs, you have to protect them. And this country is very fragile. It's very small. Everybody knows somebody. I get calls every day from people who say, how could you do that to your friend? And what can I tell them? We're just doing the job.
Sounds lonely.
It is. It is. And I take it in stride because that's the work I chose to do. During the war, I was a refugee. My epilepsy mother was in a wheelbarrow. I took her from place to place. I've seen dead bodies floating on the rivers. I've seen my friends get shot. I came close to being killed several times during the war. You want to celebrate the fact that you came back home to help start a vibrant paper and a vibrant democracy. I don't do it because I hate the government. I'm not anti-government. I am pro-Liberia. Transparency, accountability, those are the things that the lack of them took us to years of civil war. If we don't tell the people what's happening here, they will continue doing what they're doing. It's going to be like a recurring dream we're having. They will hate you for what you write, but we need to tell these stories in a way that I think only we can.
When I called Rodney in Monrovia this week, I asked him how the news had been received that Liberia was Ebola-free.
It was a time for everyone to reflect and just be happy for once. Remember when you were here in December, there was all this talk about being Ebola-free by Christmas.
Right.
And then it went Ebola-free by New Year. Now that it finally happened, I think everyone just had a sigh of relief that it's over.
But when we were there in December and the outbreak was winding down, you said that what you most feared was complacency. You said Liberians are quick to forget.
And I'm still worried about that, Brooke, because remember when you were here, there was a lot of places where you had to wash your hands before you enter, at supermarkets and stores and restaurants. Most people are now not doing that. And prior to this Ebola crisis, there was a situation where there were not enough ambulances to transport people. Because of the international support, a lot of ambulances were donated to Liberia. Those ambulances are now being used in some places for transportation of ordinary people. So already you can see that the complacency factor is setting in. My fear is that there may be some lapses near the border and we may have some kind of reoccurrence. We're praying that doesn't happen. But with all the international support, I'm just hoping that they will invest a lot of money, a lot of time in ensuring that the borders are protected until Sierra Leone and Guinea are at least back to square zero where there's no more cases in those countries.
Now, Liberia has been declared Ebola-free because it's been 42 days since the last case. That's two 21-day incubation periods back to back. But now everyone understands that it can stay in semen for months and months. So do you know for sure that there are no cases left potentially in the country?
That's a major concern for everyone. You have to stay away from sex for 3 months at least. But I would say 6 months just to be safe. There's no way of checking people to see what they're doing in their private time. I just hope that those who managed to survive the virus will be very careful and the government can put together a system where people can be monitored after this period is over, because without a celebration, anything can happen.
The new chief medical officer of Liberia, Bernice Don, co-wrote an article in the New York Times. She said that Liberia needs to be resilient after this epidemic, and she says that resilience hinges on three things: awareness, strong disease surveillance, diversity, that's the ability to address a broad range of challenges, and integration, information shared across different levels of government. Do you think Liberia has that capacity?
Well, we've just managed to get our hands on a report, a post-Ebola plan for Liberia, and they're looking at $2.8 billion from now until 2021. Most of that money has to be generated by Liberia. The thing about the government, they do a lot of good talk, but when it comes to implementation, it's a major problem. A lot of issues during Ebola was about lack of money, about lack of transparency, accountability. They have to make sure that we implement this plan to the fullest, and maybe some kind of policing system where the money that are set aside for these post-Ebola projects is somehow monitored by international folks to make sure that they go to the right places.
What's the news that's taking up front page Africa now in the wake of Ebola?
The next big thing we're working on right now is the rising epidemic of measles. A lot of kids are getting sick, and some of them are dying. And everybody pay attention to Ebola and forget about other illnesses like polio, like measles, like malaria. So we want to address those issues in the coming weeks and coming months. Mm-hmm. And we're preparing for the next presidential election because this is Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's last term. She leaves office in 2017. So the coverage of our paper is going to be changing in the next few months to the transition period, to who's next. The economy is pretty much gone back to zero. So those are issues that will have to be addressed in the presidential elections, bringing back investment in the country after Ebola. Those things are going to be very crucial to how we move forward.
I want to ask you a question. You once had a really close relationship with your uncle Kenneth Best.
Right.
Then you had a serious falling out, and I understand that you had a reconciliation?
Yeah, Brooke. Right after you left Liberia, Henry Costa, who you also interviewed when you're in town, he had my uncle Kenneth Best on his morning radio show, and Mr. Best had some good things to say about me. I think he had heard the On the Media program also about what I said about him. So Henry Costa actually ambushed me. He called me in to say that we're going to discuss something else about politics. And I'm talking, and Henry Costa leaves the studio and goes outside for a minute. And then my uncle walks in, and we broke down and started crying. He told us stories about how we worked together back in the day, and I told some stories, and we just reconciled. And after that show, we had at least five or six meetings. He made me what I am today. I think he realizes now that sometimes the student learns too much from the master and tries to do too much than what the master knew. So, but I'm glad it happened because life is too short for people to harbor grudges. And I'm glad that we're able to put things behind us.
Me too. Rodney, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, folks. I miss you guys. I hope you guys come back soon.
We really miss you too.
Without Ebola.
Without Ebola. Rodney Sia is the founder and editor of Front Page Africa.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Kimmy Regler, Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, Kasia Mihailovic, and Jesse Brenneman. We had more help from Jenna Cagle. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Greg Rippon. Kathy Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. Brooke Gladstone will be completely back next week. I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
So did you know we made a House of Cards podcast called On House of Cards? We've just finished the last one with show creator Bo Willimon. Other guests included Cokie Roberts and Linda Wertheimer, Dan Savage, and Nixon White House counsel John Dean. Also the man who plays Doug Stamper, who's really quite an actor.
In the window, I was just like, oh my God. I just freaked out. Yeah, so.
You're such a mushy person, Michael Kelly.
Yes, I am, actually. In real life, I'm nothing like him.
Some say the podcast is even better than the show. You can find it on our website at onthemedia.org.